The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The FA Cup fourth round is saved by Shrewsbury, coming back from 2-0 down to Liverpool to earn a replay at Anfield. A game too much for Jurgen Klopp, who's booked his holiday on that week. Elsewhere, unsurprising surprises as Brom beat Ham in the Battle of the Wests as the David Moyes effect really starts to take shape. We'll go through the rest of the fourth round. Baz has spent the whole weekend curating Fitbar Corner, and there's plenty of fun in Europe. Haaland strikes again. There's Setien's first defeat in Spain, a lovely goal from Neymar, and an assist for Ashley Young in Italy. We'll do all that, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. Holy Carruthers, it's Philippe Auclair. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Max.
You look well.
Thank you.
You have had a late night.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Had.
But we can wake you up by just asking you about potential owners of new football clubs.
Yeah, and, it's just I'm like Pavlov's dog. Instead of drooling, I start talking a lot of nonsense, which has to be edited out.
Faye Carruthers.
Morning, Max.
Oh, you come back from you just had your winter break.
I've had my winter break.
Excellent. Presumably in Dubai.
No, that would have been sensible. Yeah. Having a winter break somewhere warm, I went skiing instead and it was colder than here.
Okay.
Obviously.
You went skiing in Dubai?
No.
Well, they've got indoor slopes, you know.
Do they?
Yes, they do.
I went real skiing. Proper skiing.
Did you have a nice time?
Yes, thanks.
Good. Barry.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Just about to start 3 days together.
Yes.
Two nights in Dublin. You excited?
I'm like a coiled spring.
Mm. How long has the spring been coiled?
Well, I'm more tangled slinky than coiled spring.
Shall we get on with it then? The FA Cup fourth round. I was talking to you about this yesterday, Barry, but part of the joy of what was ostensibly not particularly fascinating weekend of football for me was just, it was nice to see some players I hadn't seen in a while, like Joe Hart or Phil Jagielka, Pedro and Charlie Adam and Jamie Mackey.
It's just Gareth Barry.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. There they all were. It was like, it's like sort of bumping into an old friend you haven't seen for about 10 years. And then you say, we must do coffee. And we go, yeah. And then you exchange a couple of texts and then you do the same a decade later. Game of the round, though, Philippe, was Shrewsbury Town 2, Liverpool 2.
It was the game of the round.
We needed it. We did need it.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was loads of fun, wasn't it?
It was terrific. One thing which, of course, put this game a little bit aside from the others was that Mr. Ricketts had decided to put his first team out, which already made for a nice difference compared to a number of other lower division clubs. Thinking of Brentford, for example. And yes, it was absolutely terrific. And even with a beautiful pitch invasion, the like of which we'd like to see more often. Are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, I think you're allowed
in this
to
particular
now say,
case, yes.
I think you have to...
A spontaneous demonstration of joy.
Good-natured.
Good-natured, with not too many mobile phones in show, just people jumping up and down and having a grand time. And it was actually a cracking game.
Yeah.
A cracking performance by Shrewsbury Town.
Does anyone think, and this might sound a bit strong, but Shrewsbury threw it away a bit? I mean, they had, Barry, lots of chances in that game.
I do think they should have won, and I understand that Sam Ricketts said to the players afterwards, he jokingly castigated them, saying they tanked it on purpose because they all wanted to play at Anfield. certainly, I thought they did enough to win, but they're happy with the draw. Their fans are delighted with the draw. And, well, you would theoretically, they've secured themselves a big payday, but now that Jurgen Klopp has decided the FA Cup is beneath him and beneath Liverpool, it remains to be seen how many people will actually bother to go to Anfield to watch Liverpool youth team take on Shrewsbury.
We'll get to that in just a second. There will be someone saying this wasn't Liverpool's first team, Faye, so that does make a slight difference, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but then he brought on Salah, didn't he?
And Firmino.
And they couldn't do anything. You know, they had chances at the end to win it and didn't. And I understand why he would want to rest players, and they have a strong enough second team, if you like. And actually, they have a pretty strong youth team. So they've already proved themselves, haven't they? And Curtis Jones getting on the score sheet himself, you know, proves that point. So I'm not so bothered about that. But, and I know we're going to get on to the point that Barry just made about Jurgen Klopp's comments, but that's what annoys me the most.
Barry, what was your favourite goal of the game? Because I know what it should be.
Well, it's the own goal.
Yes.
Obviously.
It was tremendous, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Donald Love, just complete, so much time and space to just toe poke it into the corner. It was lovely.
Philip, there aren't many Donalds around anymore either, are there?
Not many Donalds, you're right. Good point. I mean, I can think of one quite...
famous one.
High level Donald.
He has ensured that the name Donald is likely to,
when you
to
say that,
completely disappear.
Well, you say that. I wonder what will happen.
I was going to say it was a stronger team than the team that beat Everton.
It was, yeah.
Interesting.
It was. You had Matip coming back, you had Fabinho, you had Lovren.
And Lovren made a big mistake for that equaliser.
He made a typical Lovren when not with Van Dijk kind of mistake, yes. And you could argue it was a stronger team than the one that beat Everton, which everybody was raving about. So I don't think you can criticise him for that, for fielding that particular team.
No, sure. Two for Jason Cummins, coming off the bench to score twice. The first from the penalty spot. Sonny says, "Hi, Max and crew. I was watching Shrewsbury Liverpool. Larucci fouled for the penalty but wasn't sent off. He got a yellow. But when David Luiz did the same in the Premier League game against Chelsea, he was. I'm a bit confused with this rule. Should I wait for Lars? Does anybody want to take it? I think I can. You can take it.
Well, I was going to add to that the fact that Tim Ream was sent off as well. I was going to say for Fulham, yeah, he was in a way, or for Manchester City, whichever way you look at it. And I'm a little bit confused. I've looked at the law many times recently because of these incidents. The idea is that if you don't play the ball and then you deny a goal-scoring opportunity, and you deny a goal, and you make no attempt to play the ball, then you can have the double jeopardy or triple jeopardy, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
And in those cases, I thought, it's not that clear-cut. And
are you
or rather
sure?
Not that consistent, really.
No, I mean, I think Luigi's trying to get the ball. Tim Ream isn't.
Mm.
And David Luiz did tug his man as well as going to ground. So I think...
But in the case of what happened in the Shrewsbury game...
Yeah. He's going for the ball.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah. I think so. Well, don't you think so?
Yes, but he was woefully behind the ball and so then kind of threw his body to try and catch up.
That is still a split second, right? He was behind
yes.
and he...
Yeah.
And maybe it's just... It looks obvious if you do it, you know, have a Tim Ream and just sort of pull their shoulder or if you
forget which game you're playing.
How much did everyone enjoy commentators saying... If there had been VAR, they'd have had a look at that. So even in games where there isn't VAR, everything that happens, because that penalty was outside the box and there was a Shrewsbury handball as well that probably would have been given. Anyway, that means Liverpool don't get their two-week break during the inaugural winter break in February, but Klopp says they will get their two-week break. Klopp said, I said to the boys already 2 weeks ago, we'll have a winter break, which means we will not be there. You cannot deal with us like nobody cares about it. I know that it's not very popular, but that's the way I see it. The Premier League asked us to respect the winter break. That's what we do. If the FA doesn't respect that, then we cannot change it. We will not be there. Barry?
I think there's a few ways of looking at this. I get what he's saying, and there's clearly... been no communication between the Premier League and the FA. What a huge surprise. But I also think it's quite disrespectful to the competition. It's like, as I said earlier, he's decided the FA Cup is beneath Liverpool. Liverpool are one of the richest football teams in the world. Possibly will soon be the richest in a year or two. They have a big squad, and if he's going to send... what's ostensibly a youth team to play this replay, then I think it's disrespectful to the competition. I think it's disrespectful to Shrewsbury. I'm sure Jurgen Klopp won't give a hoot what I think or what anyone else thinks, and that's fair enough, because I get what he's saying about, you know, the Premier League have instructed teams, you know, you're getting this break, it's not an opportunity to go and play a money-making tour as a China and whatever, we want you to rest. So he's taking them literally, and that's what he's going to do.
Doesn't anyone think the winter break seems too late? Like, given the spate of injuries, and presumably this is about protecting players, isn't it? I mean,
partly, yeah.
What else would it be? I can't think what else it would be about.
The timing is justified in part by the weather conditions, which are at their worst in February,
okay.
Usually. I think that's part of the thinking. If I can be the devil's advocate, because I actually share most of... I mean, the opinions that Barry has just expressed, but Klopp has always been very, very open about the fact that we were already asking far too much from the players. And they've just come out of an absolutely hellish month of December in terms of fixture list, which is great for them because they won the Club World Cup.
They
won everything. Inside, and he's considered very clearly the League Cup and the FA Cup are not competitions he's interested in. It's not the fact that he's going to field a youth side that I find shocking at all. It's the fact that he won't be there. That's the one I don't quite can get my mind round, the presence of the manager.
Because
for me, it should be an absolutely minimum. I mean, that is what really, because he might need a break. Don't we all need a break? But surely he can come for that particular game.
Physically, yes. He doesn't need the break the players need. Mentally, perhaps he does. But I agree with you, Philippe. That is, you know, the one person that should be attending is the person who is representative of Liverpool Football Club, and that is Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, and unless he's going on, you know, a sailing trip around the Galapagos, presumably he could fly, you know, at least in business, you know, I'd suggest.
At least.
And get there an hour before kickoff and just be there. But yeah, then I suppose he would argue that that is just figurative and therefore pointless. And I guess the debate is his being there, even if he's not actually doing the managing, making it. Is that the statement that the FA Cup needs?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the other question is, what are they doing with the winter break? Is this a winter break as in they're going off and training, or are they genuinely being told, go off with your families, have a chill, and everybody's going their separate ways? And that, I don't know the answer to that, because that might change things. Mm. Because if the plan is that they go somewhere warm together and it's a very light, warm weather training, but they're still, you know, this is their break, if you like, then it's different. He does need to be there. I understand that. But I mean, the semantics with it, you could argue as well. I just don't. We will honour the break. Oh, that's very good of you. Thank you very much. I just find that it makes me really uncomfortable. I find it very dismissive, and as Barry said earlier, quite disrespectful both to the competition and to Shrewsbury.
Chris asks, when would you think it appropriate not to turn up to do your job, Barry?
I think in nearly 20 years at the Guardian, I have had one sick day.
Oh, but you have taken holiday.
I have taken holiday, yes. And
the pod,
to be honest,
going to India.
I have, while on holiday, been asked, would you mind doing this, a column or something? And I generally will reluctantly agree to it, but reluctantly.
Liverpool also played on Thursday night after we did the last pod with that win at Wolves. They almost dropped points. It was. I mean, Wolves were brilliant in this game, but Liverpool it's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And when Firmino scored, and I know everyone watching that game thinking, I think Wolves could do this, and then Liverpool just won the game, and it almost feels like you can't keep saying, "Oh, Liverpool," you know, they rode their luck a bit there. It's just a sensational run, isn't it?
They did ride their luck though. They did ride their luck, but. I mean, it also confirmed that Wolves are probably the third best team in the country, would you say?
Possibly, yeah.
No, the table can lie when you see
so
that kind of performance.
You're putting them, you're saying they're better than Leicester?
Yep.
Okay.
I think they're equally as entertaining as Leicester. I like both of their styles of play, but I'm not sure whether they're better than Leicester.
Considering that they've had to play, I think, something like 38 or 39 games, and the season started in July with the preliminary round of Europa League, with a relatively small squad, it's pretty damn amazing what they're doing. And I have to say that Raul Jimenez is starting to turn into my hero of the season. That was exquisite, that goal.
Wasn't it? Oh. Yeah. Because he was involved in the build-up and the header as well. It was a brilliant header. And how good is he? Where are we putting Jimenez in the...
He surprised me because I thought he was one of those wonderful forwards which genuinely you go to stadiums to see players of that finesse, that elegance and everything. But I didn't think he was quite the goal scorer that he is. And he scored, what, 19 this season? I think it's a revelation to everybody. And they got him for what, 20 million, something like that?
Jimenez, Zaha and Maddison are the only three players to score an equaliser against Liverpool this season in the league. Liverpool have won 31 of their last 32. They've got their game in hand on Wednesday night against West Ham.
I'm at that game.
Are you?
Yeah.
And speaking of West Ham, they were beaten 1-0 by West Brom, Barry, in what was a massive cup upset.
Well, technically it was an upset insofar as West Brom are a division below West Ham, but I would argue that in much the same way as Philippe says that the table can lie, I would suggest West Brom are a better team than West Ham, and I certainly wasn't surprised that they beat them. Interestingly, David Moyes put out a pretty strong team. West Brom made 8 changes, played more or less a reserve side, and still beat them quite comfortably. And I think West Ham are in very serious trouble because they've 4 fixtures coming up, and 2 of them are against Liverpool and 1 against Man City in the league. And I can't see them getting a point from any of those games.
Matthew says, do you think David Moyes knew he was lying when he said, that's what I do, I win. I mean, it's harsh, those press conferences. I was on air when he was doing it, and when he said, I've got the best win percentage amongst a number of managers, it was quite the qualifying. It was quite the clause. West Ham fans are worried, though. I mean, they are genuinely worried.
So they should be, yeah.
And
it's very odd, isn't it? Because you keep thinking, surely it can't be the players. I mean, the group of players is supposedly, top 10 Premier League team. It's kind of squad.
Is it? It's hard to tell.
That's what the owners want it to be.
Hard to tell because you wonder, when you see Balbuena's game, you think, well, maybe it doesn't quite belong to that kind of level. But even a player like Issa Diop, whom I really rate, is a shadow of himself. Lanzini is a very fine player. And I know he's been injured and so far, but he's so far from his genuine level. And you can go on like this almost throughout the whole team.
Yeah, I mean, when Yarmolenko's playing well, you think this is a joy. Felipe Anderson has that. Centre forwards, you just... I don't know if it's getting lucky or not doing your due diligence, but when West Ham signed Haller, a lot of German football experts said they have got a player here. You know, it wasn't like...
Very much so.
They've signed Vincent Janssen and people are like, well, it might work, it might not. It just hasn't necessarily worked. And he looks so alone, and for such a big, strong player... He's got to hold it. If you're doing that job, you've got to hold it to bring other people into play.
I mean, there's also the fact that, you know, their midfield should be built around Declan Rice, whom everybody says is this wonderful young player, but who seems to have hit a ceiling very, very early on and still makes the same mistakes, which is he loses possession in the dangerous parts of the field repeatedly. He's always done so. And you think with time... You know, his tactical, you know, now is going to improve, his sense of, you know, his awareness of danger, and it doesn't seem to have happened.
He's only 21.
I know he's only 21, but he's playing week in, week out, and perhaps too much is asked for of him.
We need to give a little bit of credit to West Brom, though,
sure.
Because Slaven Bilic made 8 changes, and they actually haven't won in the league since mid-December. They've been really top of the championship, but still struggling for form at the moment. He makes 8 changes. They get this win. That's going to give them a little bit of confidence. I think they've got Cardiff coming up this weekend. So, you know, that could help them. But also, on a personal point of view, I have so much respect and time for Slaven Bilic, and for him going back to West Ham and getting that win, I think was really big.
And a lovely strike from Connor Townsend. You know, the ball stayed ball, and that was lovely.
On the Sunday supplement yesterday, Matt Law had made some interesting points about West Ham, and they clipped it and it was on Twitter and went viral.
I was going to say, aren't we on air exactly that time? Yeah. Are you listening to that? Is that why you're not paying me any attention?
But he made the point that, just talking about how badly run West Ham are, you know, he made the point they have this awful stadium which they just pay a nominal amount of rent for, but their training ground still consists of prefabs. When they took on David Moyes, he was only allowed to bring Alan Irvine as his number 2, no other coaching staff. He wanted to bring in Stuart Pearce. West Ham wouldn't let him because Stuart Pearce made some disparaging remarks about David Gold and David Sullivan on the radio. And apparently their scouting network is practically nil. You know, I think they've 1 scout, he said. And he was basically making the point that if they go down, they could fall apart as a club.
And actually, I think that wasn't that when Jadson Fernandez chose Spurs over West Ham. I mean, you probably would anyway, but you talk about the training ground, you know, when you see that setup, which is where you're going to work every day, those things make a difference
and
to players.
And the stadium you're going to play in.
Sure.
I mean, I would hate to be for that to be my home ground if I was a player. It's awful.
I think the training ground is more pertinent than the stadium, though, because it is so far behind all other Premier League training facilities, most of which are being
improved.
Oh, without a doubt. Most of which are either have recently been refurbished and or moved or improved in some way or are being at the moment. And West Ham still has porter cabins.
Barry, if David Moyes, you said you'd hate to be a player at the London Stadium. If David Moyes came in this afternoon and offered you $30,000 a week to maybe, you know, push Declan Rice for a place in holding midfield, would you take it or would you say, actually, I don't want to play at that stadium? I'd love to see social media's reaction.
I'd take it, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, fine.
I'm not sure I would push Declan Rice. I mean, he is having a bad season, but I don't think it's quite that. It would take David Moyes at least till the end of the season just to get me fit.
Just the end of the season?
Yeah, I think he could get me fit by the end of the season.
Okay. Let's go to St Mary's. Southampton 1, Spurs 1. Philippe, Spurs actually looked quite good in this game. I saw the highlights, and they seem to be attacking with a bit of pace and a bit of flair. Lo Celso playing well again.
Well, Lo Celso, yes, was probably the main plus point for them, and they played with some purpose and were quite trenchant at times. But do you see anything more? I mean, the fact that they actually played a strong team.
Mm.
Which makes for a change as well, which shows that it's one of the competitions that Mr. Mourinho is thinking of. But again, I mean, to think that you could take any lessons from one competition and take them to the next one, to another one, is, I think, a fallacy. And we're going to talk about Manchester United in a minute, so which is the best example of that. But yeah, I mean, Lo Celso, the fact that he's a creative presence and that they're finally seemingly getting out of this nonsensical situation with Christian Eriksen, and they desperately need this kind of creative player, and maybe it could be Giovanni Lo Celso.
Portlander says, Eriksen to Inter. As a Spurs fan, and it hasn't been confirmed yet, but he says, as a Spurs fan, it's hard to work out if Levy's a genius for getting 20 million for an out-of-form Eriksen, or a failure for not getting 100 million 18 months ago, or B, keeping him happy with the salary offer he couldn't refuse. I'm disappointed we couldn't get more for him, especially when you see what Liverpool did with Coutinho and that money. But considering we bought him for 12 million, he's been an unbelievable success and repaid that investment many times over. I wish him all the best. Is Levy a genius for getting 20 or
that's
not for getting not getting 100
well, it's,
a year ago?
As Philippe says, it's still a lot of money for a player that's not in great form and has been a good servant for Spurs and done great things and been part of the Spurs revolution, getting them, you know, Champions League football for the last few seasons. So I think he's definitely repaid the investment. It's a lottery, isn't it, as to whether you sell 18 months ago or hang on. You just don't know. You don't know whether a player's going to pick up an injury. You don't know whether, you know, like there's going on at the moment, potential unrest in the dressing room. You can't predict any of that kind of stuff.
And hindsight is a great thing, isn't it? When Coutinho left, Liverpool fans were very disappointed, weren't they?
And forgot very quickly.
Yeah. Spurs apparently in advanced talks with PSV about purchasing Steven Bergwijn for 30 million euros, 22 left-sided winger compared to 10.
Yes, it's contradictory reports coming from the Netherlands about this one, some of which say that the player was left out of the squad for the weekend, but the situation is a bit more complicated, so there's still a little bit of work to be done on this one.
All right. Finally, Sofiane Boufal scored, but Danny Ings again looks sharp. Barry, if you're Gareth Southgate, you put him in the squad?
Yeah, I probably would. I personally would consider it a bit of a gamble, but it looks like Gareth Southgate's going to be low on options, so he seems like the obvious candidate. Mm.
Test him out in March for the friendlies, I would say. Mm. They're going to be training down in Southampton anyway, so
you have to pay travel expenses.
Join in.
Petrol money is cheap. It is. I always think in that situation it's very hard, isn't it? Because I imagine he will get in the squad. He may start a game. He may come off the bench. And then almost his entire England career is decided by a 40-minute run where another reserve is playing on the wing. But because it's the only game in town,
it's your chance. You've got to take it. So what can you say? I mean, he's going to be so short. I mean, who's missing? I mean, Abraham will be back.
Should be.
Should be back.
Yeah. So Kane's out.
Kane's out.
Rashford's out.
Rashford's out.
Mm. doesn't leave many options, eh?
Oh, true. One more game before the end of part one. St James's Park, Newcastle 0, Oxford United 0. Great result for Oxford United. Faye, Carl Robertson is doing a brilliant job there, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Although I have to say I wasn't massively impressed with his comments about the FA Cup either. I'm going to put him alongside Jurgen Klopp, saying that his chairman was very happy about getting a replay, but him less so. Again, I understand his point. I think they've got a squad of 20 and have played a ridiculous amount of games. It is brutal down in the EFL. However, I think you should be excited by that. Even if it was a goalless draw, you should be excited by the fact that you've held a Premier League side who are playing well at the moment to a draw and getting a replay. But... you know.
Played quite a strong side as well, Bruce.
Yeah.
And 51,000 people, I think, at St James's Park.
I would hesitate to say Newcastle are playing well at the moment.
Well,
they're getting good results,
yes.
While playing quite badly.
Semantics.
And they
you're right.
They were
Barry.
Awful against Oxford, and Oxford should have won that game.
Ryan says, should a Saudi crown prince be able to pass a fit and proper owner's test? Nick says, should the reported sale go through, how long are Newcastle fans allowed to enjoy seeing the back of Mike Ashley before having to face the reality of the new owners? This is about the leaked story of a potential £340 million takeover of Newcastle by Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund. Sources close to the talk say they are 90% certain to succeed. This sounds like one for Philippe and one for the lawyers to pay close attention to.
Well, if Saudi princes are not exactly new in the Premier League, because we've already got one at Sheffield United. Mm-hmm. This is quite different. Because
is that Billy Sharp or...?
That's right, yes.
Crown Prince Billy.
Bunny Prince Billy, or something like that.
Charlie.
Yes, Bunny Prince Charlie as well. There's already, and also Manchester United have got a commercial partner in Saudi, quite an important one. But this is rather different because we're talking about the sovereign fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The owner wouldn't be nominally Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and you probably would have a situation when it would be Yasser bin Othman Al Rumayyan, who is the guy who runs the fund, who also runs Saudi Aramco, which is just one of the biggest companies in the world. So the question is really, can you accept the fact that you go from one owner whom you don't like to an owner whom nobody likes? And it's another, I've been asking myself this question, on my way here as well, because it's coming to a point that you're wondering, you know, how complicit we all are with this kind of thing. Mm. Because we can't just go to, I know the Newcastle supporters, there was a poll in the Newcastle Chronicle, which indicated that about 80% of them were in favor of the Saudi takeover, which is a huge majority. And there's one thing, which is to be blinded by the detestation you hold the current owner in, and the other, the fact that you accept to be a chess man in a game that is played by an absolutely appalling regime, and which is using football very aggressively to promote a different image of itself, as we've seen recently in the Supercopa de España.
So do you sort of question whether you personally should sort of carry on talking about football?
It's a question I've been asking myself for a long time, and I think many of us have for a very long time as well. And then you see Shrewsbury Town against Liverpool and think that's absolutely fine, that's great. And but there are degrees. There's a very big difference even between what we say, the case of the Saudi prince who took control of Sheffield United in very controversial circumstances, by the way, who is a person, a private individual, and a regime. This is completely different. I'm of the opinion that this should be impossible, that it would be impossible for a country, or especially a regime, to control directly a football club and to use it as a means to do propaganda. They will tell you that it's not propaganda, it's a reinvention of the country. It's part of old Saudi Arabia 2030, just like Qatar would say, well, it's about part, Qatar 2022 and the PSG were part of our plan to change the way that we run our country to make it self-sustaining and so forth, and not just about oil and gas and so forth. Yeah, perhaps. But that's not the immediate aim. The immediate aim is to the acquisition of soft power and sports washing. That's what the aim is. As clear as, you know, there was an interview said by in The Athletic by Danny Taylor of Gary Cook, Manchester City, in which Gary Cook was for once completely open about it, say, it's basically it's a project to promote our image. Well, yeah, okay, promote the image of Saudi Arabia. And regardless of the changes which have happened or not happened, as it were, in the country. And then we are there. And in a way, our hands are tied because we love football. We talk about football. We live our lives through football. And we let this happen. And we're completely powerless in front of that. I mean, is the Premier League going to say no?
Mohammed bin Salman, like the UN have stated there's very strong evidence he was complicit in the murder of
Khashoggi,
the journalist. He's been complicit in illegal airstrikes in Yemen that have killed thousands of innocent civilians. He's been complicit in the torture and imprisonment of protesters in his own country, you know, peaceful protesters. He's a thoroughly nasty piece of work. But he's incredibly wealthy, and it's really depressing that if this takeover goes through, and I have a feeling it may not, there's a very good chance it won't, but more of which anon, but if this goes through, an awful lot of Newcastle fans, their only dilemma will be, who should we buy first?
There will be some Newcastle fans who don't
Yeah, well,
like
it,
that,
it's
though.
Up
you
to
can't,
each.
You can't tar them all with that.
I didn't tar them all. I said quite a lot. I didn't say all. But it's between each fan and his conscience or her conscience to decide. If he took over a club I supported, I would not go to that. I would stop supporting that club. And that's just my personal view. I'm not going to tell anyone what they should do.
And by the way, this is not about just Newcastle fans, because we could take Newcastle and replace that by the name of any other club, but I think we would have exactly the same situation.
Sure, and they would argue, you know, as you were it's trying to find the line, right? You say, you know, if it's an individual, it is different to a regime. And this might not be the right point, but in life, we are all hypocrites at one level or another. Right?
It's a question
So for example, you know, I've used this example before, but you know, I don't know where this jumper that I'm wearing was made. I didn't investigate that. So and that is different to throwing my weight behind regime, right? But it's on the same pathway of, am I doing everything right in my life?
But then the Premier League, surely that's their responsibility to take that decision, so that fans don't have to make the decision, as Barry was saying, of whether they would follow their club or not. They should be the buffer.
I mean, we all have to dine with the devil. What matters is the length of the spoon you use.
And that's where we'll end part one. We will begin part two with the game at Prenton Park. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Here's a question from Jerry. Given the chat last week about Douglas Luiz's goal celebration for the Dublin show tonight, will Barry be trying a trust exercise stage dive amongst his native brothers and sisters?
I wouldn't trust my native brothers and sisters as far as I throw them, so no.
Jerry, we're looking forward to seeing you. And Jerry did say, I've got two teenage boys I'm bringing. They're very excited. How sweary is it? So I've been in negotiation with Jerry on social media as to... he said, they like the pod, swear all you like, but...
I mean, it's not normally too Effie or Jeffy.
It's not too gratuitous, no. But it's probably more than you would ever hear in the pod.
And that is true.
It's just punctuation, really.
You're absolutely right. Who would have thought Philippe would justify swearing? That is a massive surprise. We'll see you in Dublin tonight and tomorrow night, March the 9th. Still a few tickets remaining at Glasgow University Debating Chambers. We've sold slower in Glasgow than Edinburgh because we are competing with William Shatner Live. we'll try and get done quickly and we'll all go and watch Will in action. 23rd of March, we're at Earth in Hackney and we're back in Leeds on the 9th of April, lineups TBC. Let's go to Prenton Park. Tranmere Rovers 0, Manchester United 6. Simon says, did Manchester United's 6-0 thrashing of Tranmere prove the magic of the cup still exists? And Paul says, should the grounds staff at Old Trafford turn their pitch into a potato field to improve results? This did have all the ingredients, didn't it? like a bog of a pitch, a manager under huge pressure. But I suppose if Harry Maguire is going to score a goal like that, Faye, it's probably going to be your day.
I was so chuffed for him, actually. I'm not a Manchester United fan at all, but I just to see how he's not transformed, because I've always been impressed by Harry Maguire, but, you know, since taking on the captain's armband and, you know... He was doing everything right in that game. The penalty we'll talk about, with, you know, not allowing Jesse Lingard to take it, giving it to Mason Greenwood. The goal himself. I mean, we had a load of goal scorers that don't usually be seen on the score sheet for Manchester United. Phil Jones being one, of course. Jesse Lingard back in action again. So, you know, it was a good performance from Manchester United, but they were playing against a League One side. However, they were playing on, as you called it, a bog of a pitch, which has been to blame for a couple of WSL games being called off this season as well, because Liverpool play at Prenton Park, Liverpool women, it was a good performance.
I think my favourite moment of the entire, and it was quite an underwhelming FA Cup weekend, was 4 minutes into the game, the camera cuts to Phil Jones and he's just covered in mud. He's going, if of the whole 22 players on the pitch, who would you pick?
Some lovely goals as well, you know, Dalot, Lingard.
I mean,
as well,
I was surprised that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer went with a back five, or, you know, three at the back, but three of the five scored. So,
and you mentioned that penalty, Mason Greenwood, with his right foot. And he's left-footed, isn't he? And I think, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, I believe Obafemi Martins and Bobby Zamora are the only two players to have scored Premier League penalties with both feet. Which wow. is...
I love stats like that.
That's a good one, isn't it? I mean,
that's an excellent factoid, this.
It is. I just can't quite remember if it's true or not.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good factoid.
So that's a good result for Manchester United. A good one for Manchester City as well. They beat Fulham 4-0. A few years ago, we did describe, it became a sort of phrase, having a Tim Ream between us, Barry, didn't it? As having a total nightmare. There was one game they played, I can't remember where it was, like Cardiff or Swansea or something. It was, and he was just had the worst football match I've ever seen. It was at Cardiff.
I have a feeling it was Cardiff. Yeah.
But, you know, 6 minutes in, red card. He made no attempt to get the ball. I was surprised how disappointed he looked. It almost looked he was disappointed with the decision. Really? Could they have just agreed to go home then?
I tell you what I found funny about it. His eyes literally just popped out of his head like, what? Me? It was an awful tackle.
I think he thought he might get it for free because it was early. Mm. But
anyway.
Then he munched his jersey for minutes on it.
Didn't he?
It's quite extraordinary.
Gundogan scored the penalty. Lovely hit from Bernardo Silva. A couple for Gabriel Jesus as well. But Fulham won't really care, will they, Faye? They have bigger fish to fry, don't they? Given how West Brom and Leeds are just sort of...
faltering.
Can't win, but are still in the top two, and Fulham are leading the chasing pack.
Yeah, 3 points behind Leeds, 4 points... behind West Brom. So yeah, they've got much bigger fish to fry. It would be fantastic for them to be able to bounce straight back, especially bearing in mind only 4 or 5 weeks ago we were saying it was a foregone conclusion that West Brom and Leeds were going to be getting the automatic spots. So yeah, I don't think Scott Parker will be too upset that they haven't got a distraction. I'm sure they would have, you know, been happy going through to the fifth round if things had been different, but as you say, 4 minutes in and losing a player to Manchester City.
And they were missing Mitrovic and Knockaert as well, I think, amongst others. Manchester City have Manchester United next in midweek in the Carabao. They're 3-1 up from the first leg. Can you see United coming back, Barry?
No.
Okay. One of the only interesting things really coming out of this game was Pep having a little pop at the Man City fans, Baz.
Yeah, he seemed unhappy that there wasn't a full house. I think there was about 30,000 at the game. And I can understand why fans stayed away. It's January, people are skint, there's a lot of games to pay to go to. This one was on TV, it was a lunchtime kickoff. So I can totally understand why there would have been a bit of a lack of enthusiasm. And I suspect managers sometimes forget. And I can understand why, that people actually have to pay money to go to these games.
Yeah, perhaps Pep would like to dip in his pocket and invite the extra 10,000 he wanted.
Yeah. Tickets were 10.
You know, Pep Guardiola has never in his life paid to go to a football match, you'd imagine, and it's quite possible he just sort of loses sight of the fact that a lot of people have to pay a lot of money to go to these games, and we're at a time of year when money is often in short supply.
Tickets were only 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. Quid.
You say only, if you're taking your family, that's true. Expensive still.
True.
And it's a lot of money if you don't have it.
That is also true, isn't it?
It'd be interesting to actually find out. I haven't looked yet, but the attendances for this round of FA Cup games, but I was looking at just at the figures, just like that, and I thought, oh my goodness. Because up until 2-3 years ago, there had actually been a slight rise in the number of people going to those games in the FA Cup. Well, it was at least stable, and there seems to have been quite a dip this season.
It does really depend on the draw, because we talked about this in the last round.
True.
And if it is Premier League side at home to lower league side, that totally skews things.
Absolutely.
So, you know, Shrewsbury pack it out, Tranmere pack it out.
Yeah, but look at Burnley. They were playing against the Premier League side, and I think there was only 8,000 people in the stadium. That's... Yeah. Not a lot.
That's a
is
very
it?
Good point. Hull 1, Chelsea 2. Frank Lampard said this was a kind of microcosm of their season, creating lots, not finishing teams off, getting pretty nervy at the end. Dom Rowles got in touch to say, I have a different take on Chelsea. I've been there a lot this season. I don't agree they have a striker issue. It's a midfielder problem. A young Fabregas would transform them, he says. They never create good enough chances because the midfield is so prosaic. Most of their chances are never that clear cut. Agree or disagree?
That's an interesting point. I would disagree just... speaking only on the evidence of that game, that I thought Kovacic was like a maestro in midfield and was spraying balls all over the place, and I wouldn't have thought that the point being raised there was pertinent to the game against Hull. And I am inclined to agree with Frank Lampard's assessment of the game. Like they did create a lot of chances, but just lacking a bit of cutting edge.
Millwall 0, Sheffield United 2. Two great finishes from Mo Besic just as he was about to be taken off. And you see Chris Wilder found that funny. Ollie Norwood scored a nice one as well. And Chris Wilder, Barney Ronnie saying, was very nice to the work experience boy and answered his questions. So proof that Chris Wilder, if we needed it, is nicer than anyone else. Leicester 1.
Well, technically he didn't know it was the work experience boy. Like I'm guessing.
No, because at the Guardian we dressed them as work experience. We were very
and
clear
give them
about
a badge.
It. Exactly, a massive lanyard as well, just to be clear. Leicester won 1-0 at Brentford. Lovely goal from Iheanacho, including glorious. The definition of a defensive splitting pass from Dennis Pratt, who since we mentioned on the pod that he didn't really do anything, has continually done things.
He's got to win the Ballon d'Or, it'd be all thanks to us.
Faye, you were there.
No.
Huh.
No, I wasn't.
Producer Sammy says, I think Faye was at this game.
No. I went to have a look at Brentford Stadium the other day.
The Pratt's pass was a definition of what they call a pre-assist in ice hockey, isn't it? Mm. Where they do account for the pass that leads to the pass that leads to the goal.
It was a pre-assist. I don't know how many points you get in fantasy football for an assist anymore, because
I've
stopped playing, but for the pre-assist you should at least get a point. It was a really nice moment in the commentary where Jermaine Gina said something like, every Brentford player is comfortable on the ball, and as he said it, the Brentford centre back tripped on the ball and gave it away. But you know, they do look, they're another side, Faye, that won't be that bothered about going out, because they are pushing, aren't they?
Yeah. They're a couple of points behind Fulham, and they've been on fantastic form, whereas, as we just discussed, the top two slipping up recently. Brentford, I've watched them a lot this season. They are a joy to watch. Thomas Frank's got them playing really lovely football.
They're all comfortable on the ball.
Well, yeah, apart from that defender. all comfortable on the ball. The first game I watched them this season, they beat Derby 3-0 and made Derby, I mean, doesn't take that much to make Derby look average, particularly this season. Sorry, Derby fans. But Brentford hadn't had a great start to the season. And when you think that they've not had a great start, where they are now in such a tight league. It would be amazing if they could, it's their last year, their last season at Griffin Park, if they could start the new season in their new ground in the Premier League. That would be incredible.
It's scripted, isn't it? Leicester go to Villa on Tuesday in the Carabao, delicately poised at 1-1. Who do you want to win, Philippe?
Well, that's an unfair question. Who do I want to win?
Because you, whenever you watch a match as a neutral, I'm not sure, but when I turn it on, even though I'll be on stage in Dublin when I watch it later, I will... You instantly just start supporting a team. You can't... I don't know, does that happen to anyone else? When I'm watching games as a neutral, I always decide...
I'd be happy for either to go to Wembley, is the way I would put it. Honestly, and that's a sincere opinion.
No, you always have a little bit more of an allegiance, one or the other.
It could change during a game. If some, you know, if there's a real injustice or something, then I can change, but...
I remember Danny Baker saying once that, you know, even if it's just like a kickabout in the park,
yeah,
he picks a team.
Because you always pick out a player that's annoyed you for something, that's done something that you're not keen on, or another player who you think, oh, he's totally underrated, and then you sway to that side.
Burnley 1, Norwich 2. Pugwash Canary says, has a team ever been rock bottom of any division while getting regular compliments for playing good football? I can't decide if my team is rubbish or quite good.
Wigan did.
The results are rubbish, but the football is quite good. Can it be good football if they never win?
Well, Danny Murphy said on Match of the Day that Norwich were the best worst team he's ever seen in the Premier League.
It's because Daniel Farke's not changing. You know, he's been really resolute about that. Don't want to change the way we played. We got up this way. And I know, I don't actually think they are that bothered about relegation in a strange way. Whereas Fulham, everybody wanted them to play the way they did when they were promoted, and when, you know, that didn't happen, they had to change things, and then that didn't work either, too late. I quite respect Daniel Farke for not changing his philosophy.
And his board for supporting him.
Exactly.
QPR 1, Sheffield Wednesday 2. A good win for Sheffield Wednesday, Faye. Gary Monk has been doing a good job there. They're stuttering in the league slightly in the last few weeks, but he's got them better.
Yeah, he has definitely got them better. They've lost their last three in the league. So, you know, this will probably be a welcome win for them, even though it's not in the Championship. But yeah, since he's taken over, they've been fantastic. And, you know, they're in the top 10 and potential for a playoff place.
Portsmouth beat Barnsley, League One beating the Championship. Are you surprised, Barry?
I wasn't surprised by that either. That was another of Saturday's upsets, in inverted commas. Barnsley are struggling in the Championship. Portsmouth are doing well in League One, and I think there's 7-9 places between them. Wasn't particularly surprising.
Lovely goal from Corley Woodrow for Barnsley. Absolute banger, wasn't it? Northampton 0, Derby 0. Lovely to see Wayne Rooney at Six Fields. Reading 1, Cardiff 1. Reading's goal was a mile offside. The game was overshadowed by the arrest of 4 Cardiff fans for alleged racial aggravated abuse. 2 men in their 20s, 2 teenagers. Warnings relating to the alleged incidents were issued via the PA system at the Majeski Stadium. Cardiff City said in a statement they were aware of the allegations. They said, we'll be speaking to Reading Football Club, Thames Valley Police and South Wales Police in attendance with our travelling support to ascertain the facts of the matter. We'll conduct these conversations with the relevant authorities before making any further comment. Coventry and Birmingham drew 0-0, so Birmingham fans get the home end. Players get their home kit and the home dressing room for the replay. Yet the highlight of this game was missed on Match of the Day. You know, they were just playing the highlights and then the screen went black and it cut to a confused-looking Gabby Logan with Karen Carney and Danny Murphy having to just suddenly start talking about it. And Danny pointed out there was an amazing miss, but you didn't see the miss because the tape had broken. But if you do want to look it up, Callum O'Hare basically just didn't bother kicking it when he had an open goal late on. Producer Jonathan writes, parental advisory, enjoy the Birmingham fans chanting, who's the wanker in my seat? there was one game in the Championship as we look at the Football League. Stoke got their third win in 4 under Michael O'Neill, winning 2-0 against Swansea. They were bottom when he took over, now 7 points above 22nd, just 2 defeats in their last 9.
Did you see that Sam Clucas celebration?
No, I didn't.
Magnificent. Oh.
He, a proper Adebayor, ran the length of the pitch down to the Swansea fans, who obviously he used to play for Swansea, and celebrated. It looked like he was doing a money thing as well. I wasn't quite so keen on that, but it was
maybe it was just a pack of cards.
Maybe
maybe he was saying there's not just magic in the FA Cup, there's magic in the Championship as well. 5 games in League One. Change at the top. Ipswich beat Lincoln 1-0. Rotherham lost 2-1 at Peterborough. The other 3 games were all draws, including Bristol Rovers' goalless draw with Fleetwood. Rovers haven't scored a single goal in the league since Boxing Day.
I think they missed a penalty as well.
They haven't won in 7 games since Graham Coughlan left. In League 2, There are 11 games in all. Swindon beat Port Vale 3-0 to open up a 2-point lead at the top. Second place Exeter could only draw with Colchester. Carlisle and Macclesfield put some distance between themselves and the bottom two with important wins. And Cambridge United fantastically got their first point of 2020, drawing 1-1 at second bottom Morecambe. Oh, God. Leyton Orient beat Newport 2-1. Events off the pitch went viral on social media as a spectator was spotted taking receipt of a delivery from Papa John's Pizza in their seat.
That's brilliant.
The moped went into the ground. It's marvellous, isn't it? And in the non-league, really good fun. Have you seen this at Garforth Town of the North Counties East League Premier Division? Yes. Alex Lowe, his team have a corner. And there's a breakaway and he commits a terrible foul. The ref plays on. Alex gets up and then sprints to the edge of his own box where he gives away another terrible foul. So the referee books him for the most recent foul and then points back again and books him for that one and then sends him off.
Well, he did it in the other order.
Did he do it? Oh, did he do it chronologically?
Yeah. Oh, okay, no, I don't think he did.
I thought he went to booking for this one
and then he went back.
Absolutely.
Oh. Yeah. Either way, it doesn't matter. Does it? Either way.
It would have made more sense to do it chronologically though, Barry. You're right.
Yeah, the three-card trick.
It was really good. In the women's game, it was the fourth round of the FA Women's Cup this weekend too. In the Manchester Derby, City beat United 3-2. Two from Ellen White, one from Jill Scott. So Arsenal bounced back from their big defeat against Chelsea last weekend by beating West Ham 2-0 to progress. Fourth tier Ipswich beat Huddersfield 4-1. 16-year-old Maddie Biggs got herself a hat-trick. And Liverpool took their minds off the relegation battle they're currently in by beating Blackburn 8-1. To Fitbar Corner, Barry, over to you.
Well, the only story in town, I suppose, is Steven Gerrard celebrated his 100th match in charge of Rangers by losing against Hearts, who were bottom of the league. I don't think it was a result nobody saw coming, but Daniel Stendel's in charge of Hearts. He's got off to a ropey start, but this is probably going to win a lot of fans over. They came from behind to beat Rangers 2-1. Ryan Kent had put Rangers ahead. Stephen Naismith, newly appointed captain of Hearts, equalised. And then Liam Boyce, who they signed from Burton Albion during the week, he scored the winner. And Stephen Gerrard wasn't happy afterwards. He said, I didn't recognise my team out there. He said there was about 8 players who were just passengers. And he said, Hearts deserve the win. They've rushed us off the pitch. They've rattled us. You can lose a football match, but when you don't recognise your players, it's a bit of a shock. Before today's game, Celtic were waiting for us to blink. Today we've blinked big time. So they had a chance to go within 2 points of Celtic, and they have a game in hand. But now they're 5 points behind with the game in hand. Celtic beat Ross County 3-0 on Saturday.
Thanks, Barry, for Fitbar Corner. Before we end part two, we would just like to extend our thoughts and our best wishes to the family of Jordan Sinnott, the footballer who was on loan at Matlock Town, was found unconscious in Nottinghamshire in the early hours of Saturday morning and passed away. After that, two 21-year-olds have been arrested on suspicion of murder. Another man, a 27-year-old, who was arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm, remains in police custody. Police say they're investigating two large-scale fights that took place in the town. But yeah, our thoughts very much with the family and friends of Jordan Sinnott. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain with Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. I'm not going to ask you how you are.
That's okay. You don't have to. Hey, Barcelona lost 2-0 at Valencia. Quique Setién's first defeat in charge in only his third game. What's the reaction been to that?
The reaction has been huge, really huge, and a real sense of, oh, okay, this is a real worry now. This is really something very badly wrong. He's had 6 games in charge. Of course, he had the 1-0 win against Granada. They had a 2-1 win against Ibiza, second division B team in the Copa del Rey, with a 94th minute winner from Griezmann. They've been training 1-0 for well over an hour, and now they've been beaten 2-0. Those first two games, suggested something in the shift in style. And of course, we talked about this last Monday, didn't we? We were saying in a way the Granada game wasn't about judging whether they were good or bad. It was about seeing how it might be different, structurally, how this might look, what kind of approach they were going to have. But of course, you do need to be winning while it's not really a question of good or bad and finding your place. This weekend, there was a continuation of that theme, which is lots of the ball without necessarily being particularly creative, lots of possession to try and protect yourself as much as necessarily to attack, but they didn't manage to protect themselves. And obviously this is against a properly good team away at Mestalla against Valencia. So it's different to the Granada game, different to the Ibiza game. And Valencia got a penalty with the first attack they'd had after 10 minutes. Barcelona, I think, were up at something like 75% possession, completely dominating the ball, but lost it once. Bang, penalty, saved by Ter Stegen. But from that moment onwards, it felt like the game shifted, like there was an awareness now that, okay, we're vulnerable. And Barcelona were horribly vulnerable. You know, they lose 2-0, there's a missed penalty, there's a shot against the bar, there's a goal disallowed, all of those for Valencia. And with Barcelona, I think that the thing that struck me more than anything else was the sense that Messi's going to get really bored if this is the way it's going to go, because they keep the ball so much, which obviously encourages the other team to park the bus. They accumulate a whole load of players inside, which isn't necessarily a bad thing if you use the ball really well and you can then open the pitch up and then come back inside again. But it just felt, to me at least, like it meant that Messi was even more in a cage than normal, you know, even more surrounded by opponents than normal, and everyone looking to him to provide some kind of cutting edge to go with the kind of endless possession.
And wasn't the idea that he would be freed up, Messi?
Well, I mean, that's part of the idea, except of course it's, I think there's two different things here, two different types of freed up. One is freed up from the need to go and press and do that kind of, if you like, frontline defensive work, or maybe not frontline defensive work, but that work that says go and get the ball back, you know, that, so you free him up from some of that physical obligation. And that part of it, I suppose, is happening. But of course, the other part of freeing him up is freeing him up from the attentions of other players, giving him the space in which to play, giving him people to play off when he gets the ball. And those things aren't happening. One, of course, is I mean, look, it's very early, and it may well be that with time it does happen. But I think there's a couple of things. One is that he hasn't got Luis Suarez there, who's the person who would fix the two centre-backs in place and allow Messi to play off him and prevent those centre-backs coming out to Messi and crowding him even more with the midfielders. And the other is that there's not really the width yet that stretches the game out and opens space inside for Messi. And by putting Messi as a number 10 rather than coming off the right, yeah, he just seems to be even more crowded than ever.
Is that Stella?
That's Stella. She's gone crazy, yeah.
I haven't heard from her for ages.
That's what she does when someone comes in the house. She completely loses her nut.
Real Madrid go top. They beat Valladolid 1-0. Rumours about Gareth Bale coming to Spurs. Is that total nonsense?
I can't tell you 100% for sure right now that it's total nonsense, but it just doesn't fit with any of the things that until at least 3 or 4 days ago I was being told about the situation. Bale, Spurs do not have the money to make this happen. Bale didn't necessarily have the inclination to go back. Obviously, situations change and players change their minds, but I must admit I can't see it.
And how are Real playing at the moment?
Well, they're sort of not, and yet at the same time, and I know this sounds contradictory, and it particularly sounds contradictory with the way that we treat Barcelona. We say, oh yeah, well, they were top with Valverde, but they weren't very good, and they weren't playing great football. Madrid aren't playing great football either, but our analysis, or the way we sort of read it, makes us think, oh, well, they're brilliant. Because they're defensively strong, which is something they've not had in previous years. They haven't, I think I'm right in saying they haven't had a goal scored by a forward since October. Admittedly, there's not been a huge amount of football since October, but there's been quite a bit. The last three games have been won by goals from Varane, Nacho and Casemiro. But of course, in a way, that makes you think, well, you know, this is what a team does to win the league. And Zidane said it last night quite directly. He said, look, we know that if we're defensively strong, we'll get a chance. And if that chance is from a dead ball or from a cross slung in the box, particularly when you've got someone who delivers it as well as Toni Kroos does, they're going to keep winning, even if they're not always that much fun to watch. And by the way, all of this is happening without Hazard. So, of course, once Hazard is fully fit, you get the feeling that, in theory at least, they should be even better.
He's the modern-day George Graham, Zinedine Zidane, isn't he?
There's an element of that.
Atleti down to fifth. They failed to beat Leganes. Is Edison Cavani the answer?
I think Edison Cavani is the answer. They think he's the answer, or at least a lot of people are clinging hope to him, which I think is probably a risk in the sense that I think it probably disguises that some of the problems are deeper. Simeone, of course, they were knocked out of the Copa del Rey in midweek by Cultural Leonesa. That's the first time they've been knocked out of the Copa del Rey by a lower level team since the defeat against Albacete, which is what brought Simeone in the first place. They're now not even in Champions League place because Getafe overtook them yesterday. They're not playing very much football. If you could argue, maybe they didn't always anyway. But there's a kind of a lack of anything about them now. There's a lack of personality. There's a lack of leadership. I include myself in this. I think we were guilty of getting overexcited in the summer with the signings they made, €256 million worth of players. But of course, that was the payoff for losing six starting 11 footballers. And I think I would argue probably all six, maybe at least five of the six anyway, had the kind of personality and character and leadership that basically you look at the team now and you think, there isn't one player in that team that has that anymore. There is this sort of, it's almost like this isn't a Simeone team anymore. And Simeone said at the weekend, you know, they finished 0-0 with Leganés. He said at the weekend, you know, in that situation before, we'd have lost this game. And I could not disagree more. It was the complete opposite. 20 minutes ago, it's 0-0. It used to be, you go, well, Atleti will win this 1-0. They'll be a header from a corner and they'll win this 1-0. Yesterday, it was the complete opposite. You're feeling, no, you know, they used to win these. They're not anymore. They're like they're not Atletico anymore.
More importantly, Sid, you have a new ham.
I do. I didn't know this, right? I
mean, there's so much ham in your garage, no, you don't even notice.
Yeah, that's the thing. What I mean is, I didn't know I was even due a ham. Now, this is, as I think I've explained before, a kind of a Christmas thing in Spain that companies who have people working for them say, you know, you've got ham. Anyway, I didn't know this. And the other day, I got an email and said, a reminder to collect your Christmas ham. I mean, you know, it's a month now since Christmas. I was like, brilliant, I'm on a list for a ham. So I went to the office on Friday and they didn't have it. So I had to go back again and finally came home with this huge box of pig.
Excellent news. How many hams are they currently in the garage?
Actually, I think now that might actually be the only one left because I think we gave up on the others because they've been sitting there for too long.
Anyway, lovely news.
I plan to actually do something with this ham. Maybe I can vacuum pack it and send it to you.
Well, invite us over. We'll do a pod in Spain. And during part three, we'll make Barry eat the whole ham with no water.
He can eat the ham like Homer Simpson does with a chicken leg, literally just holding one end and gnawing on it.
If you ever need help getting rid of lots of ham, Fabian Schär from Newcastle is the man to... He's good at disposing of...
Florian Lejeune.
Oh, sorry, Florian Lejeune.
Yeah, Fabian Schär.
I can only apologise at this stage because I have no idea what that reference refers to.
Don't worry.
Is he a particularly hammy footballer in some way?
Just Google it, Sid.
What was his name again?
Florian Lejeune.
Okay,
and dead bodies.
And dead bodies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Sid Lowe, thanks.
Bye.
Cheers, Sid Lowe, out in Spain. To Germany, star of the weekend, again, Erling Braut Haaland. Borussia Dortmund beat FC Cologne 5-1. Haaland started on the bench, even after his hat-trick last week. He came on with 25 minutes to go and scored two. One a poacher's finish, one where he went around the keeper, finished from a very tight angle. Here are his records and stats so far. He scored 5 goals in his first 57 minutes in the Bundesliga, which is unsurprisingly a record. The first ever player to score 5 goals in their first 2 Bundesliga games. He scored 1 more goal in 57 minutes than Manchester United have in 4 league games so far in 2020. He's up to 33 goals and 7 assists in 24 games in all competitions this season. Accounting for substitute appearances, he's scoring a goal every 46 minutes. And maybe we shouldn't get carried away, but it would be great if he kept up that record for the rest of his career. They played 2 struggling sides, but still extraordinary stuff. Dortmund staying 4th as 4 of the top 5 won. The only losers at the top were RB Leipzig. They went out 2-0 at Eintracht Frankfurt, first league defeat since October. Bayern are now a point behind in second. They beat Schalke 5-0. Lewandowski getting his 21st of the season. And Borussia Mönchengladbach a third, just a point behind Bayern. They beat Mainz 3-1. From Germany to Italy on a weekend where none of the top 4 could get a win, here's Nicky Bandini.
Well, it was Ashley Young's first weekend playing in Serie A, and he helped Inter to trim the gap to leaders Juventus. That might be a little bit of an oversimplification, as you mentioned there, Max. None of the top 4 won in Italy this weekend. Inter were first up playing at home to Cagliari, and they really had a opportunity to put pressure on Juventus, because Juventus were playing away to Napoli in the evening. You also had Lazio, who have been the other title contenders this season, playing in the Rome derby in the afternoon. So Inter against Cagliari at home, their chance to put the pressure on. Ashley Young set up a goal for Lautaro Martinez after less than half an hour, was playing very well, and you thought, okay, they're getting the start they needed. But they had a penalty appeal again. Ashley Young via a lovely little ball from Lukaku, and you could see their relationship already having an impact on the pitch. But he had a penalty appeal turned down after they had an exchange. He got into the area, clearly for me checked by Christian Oliva, but the referee didn't give it. 50 minutes later, Raja Nainggolan scores an equaliser for Cagliari via deflection. Some bitter irony there for Inter fans, given that Antonio Conte has been banging on all season about the lack of experience in his squad. All of this winter transfer campaign has been about adding experienced players like Ashley Young, and of course Raja Nainggolan, who is owned by Inter, playing on loan at the moment with Cagliari, and who played in the Champions League semi-final two seasons ago, a player of experience, scoring against them to deny them the points. So at that point, felt like a disastrous result for Inter, really sort of melted down at the end. Lautaro Martinez gets sent off for protests, a second yellow card in injury time, and you think, this might be it, this might be the wheels coming off the title challenge. But Roma and Lazio then draw, and then after that, Juventus lose away to Napoli. Napoli, who had won only one out of five games, they lost four out of five after appointing Gennaro Gattuso to replace Carlo Ancelotti in the league. But just perhaps might be turning a corner, because they did win in the cup in midweek, and they played a really intelligent game here. They set out to stifle Juventus, which they did very effectively for about 60 minutes, and then they broke it open with Lorenzo Insigne having a shot spilled. Piotr Zielinski follows it up and scores. Insigne then volleys home to put them 2-0 up. Ronaldo grabs one back in injury time, but it's too little too late. So Juventus lose in a game that, of course, carries quite a lot of heat, because Maurizio Sarri was the manager at Napoli and the fans have not forgiven him. He was the manager there. He was the great manager there. He was the one who took them to more than 90 points within a whisker of the title. But the fans have not forgiven him at all for moving on now to Juventus. They still haven't forgiven Gonzalo Higuain either for his move from Napoli to Juventus. So a lot of heat in this game, and a lot of satisfaction felt by Napoli supporters, despite the miserable season that they're having, at having put another spoke in Juventus' wheel. It means that Inter are to within 3 points of them at the top with their draw. Could have been more, of course, they'd won, but still gaining ground. Lazio also gained ground with their draw. They will be within two if they win their game in hand against Verona. But that draw with Roma did mean that they have ended now their run of 11 consecutive wins. So definitely an interesting weekend at the top. Need to give a quick mention as well for Atalanta, who are just behind that top four. They're in fifth place at the moment, and yes, also managed to gain a bit of ground on Roma, but they won 7-0 against Torino. They are just playing such brilliant, entertaining football at the moment. They haven't been entirely consistent. They might not get into the top four again, but God, they are fun to watch. So if you get a chance, do.
Thank you, Nikki, to France. Philippe, PSG won 2-0 at Lille. Lovely goal from Neymar.
Absolutely glorious. And I hope if you're looking for it, as I hope you will do if you're listening to this pod, please make sure that the clip you see is not just the strike that gives him the goal, but the build-up outside the penalty box. Controls it with his chest, bounces it on his knee, impeccable pass. Then moves again, places himself in a great situation, little jink to the right, and this wonderful shot in the top right-hand corner. Absolutely magnificent.
Marseille in second can only draw, 10-point gap now there. A weird fact that you've brought to our attention, PSG will have played 27 of their 32 games under floodlights this season, all games having started later than 8 o'clock local time, and the club is actually worried this is having a negative impact on the players.
It has a negative impact on the players. I mean, the reason why this is because simply the rights holders want PSG to have the big game, which is the Sunday night game in France. And also PSG, of course, playing the Champions League, and which is 8:45 p.m. kickoff in continental Europe. And what happens is basically the circadian rhythm of the players is completely buggered for a number of days after that, that they find it very difficult to go to sleep before at least 1:30 in the morning, and some players 4 to 5 a.m. And you add to that, obviously, the travel, the air travel and so forth, and they're worried that it's having an impact on the players. And there is, in fact, a study which has been done which proves statistically that the players who have this number of late games are more prone to muscular injuries, soft tissue injuries. Not a huge amount, but I think it increases the probability by 2%. So when you add to that the fact that PSG players are well known for having for their nocturnal activities, hello Neymar, this adds to a worrying situation for Thomas Tuchel. And but it is actually a very serious point.
It's interesting,
Which has been made, and it's also the case for other sports and collective sports where players play very late at night. I'd be interested. I mean, maybe I'll ask Sid at one point, because in Spain, obviously, they have late kickoffs, to see if they have got a way to deal with that. But obviously, at PSG, they think they have a problem.
You wanted to talk about Rayan Cherki as well, the Lyon Academy player.
Yeah, I mean, it's just astonishes me that Lyon is capable. I mean, I know that the economic model of the club is always, let's find young players in our area, make them into the best they can possibly be, and they've got a fantastic, I mean, record at bringing young players from the area to the first team, and then sell them on a bit later, and this is the way that the club finances itself, more or less. And they found another one, and Rayan Cherki, who is only 16 years old, and who played in the French Cup against Nantes, so another Ligue 1 team. And he scored two, he had two assists, and he provoked a penalty. That's the kind of player we're talking about. Absolutely extraordinary. And another 16-year-old to in the league of all talents, after, you know, Kamavinga, who is my favourite from Rennes, now you can add Rayan Cherki to the list.
I will. I'll add it to my spreadsheet of young academy products that Philippe likes. Sad news about Rob Rensenbrink, died at the age of 72. The Dutch Football Association have said he played most of his club football in Belgium with Club Bruges and Anderlecht. His weaving runs earned him the nickname Snake Man. Mm-hmm. He was a regular for the Netherlands in that great team in the 70s, played 46 times, scored 14 goals. Perhaps always be best remembered for the goal he didn't quite score in the 78 World Cup final, but you saw him play, Philippe.
Yes, and I think he was one of the most magical wingers of his generation, probably the most magical winger of his generation. And the fact he's not better known, and actually his passing hasn't been reported a lot. I mean, it says, you know, that's what happens when you're part of the Johan Cruyff, Piet Keizer generation, Van der Kerkhoff generation, and Neeskens and all the Serbia and all these. He was not as regular in the team because he was not a total football kind of player. He played most of his football at Anderlecht, with whom he actually won the Cup Winners' Cup twice and the Super Cup twice as well. And he was probably Anderlecht's greatest ever player at a time when Anderlecht were one of the best teams in Europe. And he didn't fit quite the mold that other players of his generation did. You know, it's total. He was different. He was an impish, kind of jinky player, absolutely delightful. I mean, the way it was all about avoiding contact. The kind of players that you don't see very often these days, but an absolute poem of a player.
Finally, Barry, you know when I make those statements to you that aren't a question and you say, what do you want me to say?
Yes.
Well, I found a good reason for doing them. This is from Below the Line. Lee says, long-time listener, first-time commentator. I cycle from central to south Birmingham along the cycle, foot and canal paths, and Monday and Thursdays are a joy, he says. Barry's dead-air thoughts on Max's inane questions usually allow me to listen for traffic before hitting the parks and safer cycle lanes so I don't get killed. So that's good,
so
isn't
it? So I'm saving lives.
Yeah. Well, between us, saving lives. He says, my main comment on a separate note is the audio setting on the Read It To Me section that the Guardian articles have on my mobile has clear grammatical errors in the description of the FA Cup. The audio setting I have describes it as the fuck up. Which is very apt when things don't go to plan for the favourite team. Can we please describe it as the fuck up? When these circumstances arise in future, my 14-year-old would love this as she pisses herself laughing even after 2 years of hearing it every Tuesday and Friday on the way to athletics training. So, yes, from all of us at the Fuck Up fourth round special, we'll be back for the fifth round special. In the meantime, we'll be back on Thursday. Philippe, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Max.
Faye Carruthers, thank you.
Thank you. You've done so well, by the way. And then it was four swears in about 4 seconds.
With apologies to Jerry and his boys, we'll see you later in Dublin. Barry, we're about to spend 3 days together. Are you looking forward to it?
No.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.